3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Hello, and thank you for joining us for this week's episode of The No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. Hi, I'm your co-host, Stephanie Weirwill, EVP of Engagement, and I'm joined today, as always, by the incredible, the brilliant Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy here at Revive. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm so good. It's good to be back with you. We've had a couple episodes with special guests, and we're back to our no normal crew.
Yes, and for some exciting headlines as well.
That's right. This is one of our mini episodes. We call it Newsflash by No Normal because the headlines continue to be hot, hot, hot as we head into the cold, cold, cold holidays. And at Revive, we say we embrace the chaos of healthcare to build leading brands. What that means is that chaos is all over the place in healthcare every week, every day, every minute. There's new headlines happening. There's a lot of chaos happening. And as we head into the holidays, there are quite a bit of changes and news coming at us fast. So we're going to cover the chaos as quickly as we can, 5-10 minutes plus, depending on how many headlines there are. But we'll jump into the chaos. And for those listening, this is the week of December 11. So if you're listening after December 12 and there's changes, you know, hit us a note and we can talk about those updates after the fact. So let's just jump in. So the first one is big news from the M&A world, from the mergers and acquisitions world for health plans, which we like to cover pretty closely because what happens with plans affects providers, affects everyone else. So Chris, why don't you give us this headline about what's going on in the plan world?
Well, should it be surprising that the big are trying to get even bigger? But obviously, if you've been watching the news, you have seen that Cigna and Humana were working on a deal that has since been dropped. It sounds like the two have been, oh, shall we say, maybe dating on and off for years, talking about options. It would have created a $140 billion health insurance giant. And the rumor is that they could not agree on price and financial terms. The deal would have actually rivaled the size of United Healthcare as well as CVS. But it doesn't sound like we'll be seeing a Cigna Humana anytime soon. But again, if the reports are true that they've kept the lines of communication open, you know, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? And just because they're not coming together officially doesn't mean that there's still no growing going on, because the rumors are that Cigna will focus instead on acquisitions, so smaller kind of acquisitions, which is a pretty common play at the moment. And so we expect that there will be more news to come on this health plan deal. And it's not the first time that they've done this, right? Like, they, for example, Cigna made an acquisition of Express Scripts in 2018, which was a $54 billion acquisition, big numbers here, making it a pretty big PBM player. And, you know, these numbers are huge. And Chris, we like to follow these very large, you know, numbers, whether it's the size of acquisitions or whether it's the size of profitability that health plans deal with, because they're pretty different than we see in the provider space, right? The provider space, you don't usually see those kinds of big billion-dollar numbers of capital just sitting around, ready to be deployed.
No, and you know, the other thing is it's just so active between horizontal as well as vertical integration. And I think that's what makes it, you know, besides the fact that, you know, there doesn't seem to be the same kind of regulatory attention to those ginormous, those ginormous plays, which I think is frustrating when you look at the payers, the provider space and the attention that's given to those deals. But yeah, again, these are big deals. It's horizontal, it's vertical. In any way you slice it, you know, it's in many ways, it makes things for providers more challenging.
It does. It does. I would take this as a bit of a good thing that we're not going to see another huge player at the moment. That doesn't mean never. Just because the more plans come together, the bigger they get, the more leverage they have in their rate increases with providers, which of course has been heating up over the last few years anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, probably a good thing, but again, we'll see. Do you disagree with that, Chris? Or
no,
agree?
Totally agree. Totally.
Okay. So we'll move on past the plan space and get into one of our favorite topics right now, which is the world of AI and generative AI. It's everywhere you look, and we're certainly paying close attention. So our second headline is, you know, big announcement. I think it's really exciting. The time has come that Google has released Gemini, which has been rumored to be released for a while. Gemini is Google's new large language model that is even more powerful than its previous model. So, Chris, tell us a little bit about Gemini.
Oh, my God, Stephanie. I have a feeling that I'm going to be looking back at moments like this last week and how things are so rapidly changing and saying, I remember when. And, you know, seeing what Gemini can do. So Gemini is a multimodal model. So it means it's not just trained on text alone like other models. So meaning things like text, of course, but images, video, audio, and code. And essentially, it can decode many types of data at once, similar to kind of how humans use different senses as we run about the world. So with basically, when given input with more than one type of data, like a piece of text and an image, it extracts the relevant details. That's the from each data type. That's the modality separately, and then it looks for the features and patterns in the extracted data, and then it can fuse that information and use that to kind of make predictions. And if any of you saw the video that was used to kind of describe what Gemini could be. I mean, it was just, I mean, honestly, I literally felt the hair on the back of my neck standing up. It was super, super exciting. So that was kind of my take on it. If you haven't taken a look at that, you really need to, because it's not only going to revolutionize, you know, our professional lives, it has the potential, these kinds of capabilities have the potential to really revolutionize our world.
Yes. I love your geekiness here, Chris. I agree. Like, I think it's a big deal. I think that the last, year, of course, has been huge, but just this last month in this area, and we're just going to see it speed up even more. So I want to dig even more in on the multimodal and why it's such a big deal. You know, up until now, we've used all these different tools for text versus video versus audio. And frankly, the video and audio haven't been that great. And I love how Google talked about it in one of their many videos that they put out. They said, you know, humans are multisensory, right? We have five senses. We see at the same time as we hear, as the same time as we speak, and all these, you know, senses together. So AI should be too. And Facebook has played a little bit in this space. Meta has played a little bit in this space. They put out some visions for kind of like tools that are able to do all the things, but not in the way that this seems to be able to do. So it's pretty exciting. And Gemini now officially already powers a lot of the tools that people use from Google, including Bard. So it's here. It's now. It's not like a vision for tomorrow. Although it's still building a bit.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I just have to kind of say, I mean, Stephanie, I remember like in November of 2022 when ChatGPT first came out, and you were all over it and you were like, oh my God, this is going to change things and whatever. Honestly, it took me a little bit of time to get on board. And part of that was I had to take the time to really kind of understand and see what it was and dig in. And, you know, I have to say I've really kind of, you know, seen the light. And you know, we're going to talk a little bit more, I think, in a few minutes about what it could mean for our profession. But what's fascinating now is things are just changing so, so rapidly. I have news alerts set up across this space just to kind of try and get a sense of what's happening. Hopefully I can use a large language model to synthesize some of that information for me, because that becomes the new promise. But what we're seeing is a great big race to the top. What's happening, of course, ChatGPT was a first mover. You know, it's getting a little bit of a beat down given all the drama that that has happened there in the last month or so. And Google's, obviously, at the forefront of this as well, and is looking like it's taking the opportunity to really kind of jump ahead. So what do you see from your seat? Because I know you're all over this too.
Well, I'm kind of, as of this news coming out a few days ago, I've started not just using one tool or the other, but both of them at the same time. Like, I'm kind of running my own little test cases, put the same question in ChatGPT as I am in Bard, and I'm noticing some big differences, to be honest. I can't quite say for sure which one is better, although I think that the, you know, Google study showed that Gemini's model is beating GPT's model 30 of 32 times. For myself, I'm seeing differences, different answers, which is kind of cool. It's almost like now having two assistants who have different ways of thinking, and maybe they're both wrong sometimes, and that's all right too, right? I'm using it for more, at the moment, like math equations, actually, because I've really noticed that they're not that advanced from a math finance standpoint. I think that's really an interesting place to play. But anyway, so it's kind of a fun test to do. I did see reports where ChatGPT is starting to stall a little bit, and just given all the upheavals they've had, they've not been updating their models as much, maybe even since November or since a month ago. And there were some funny rumors where folks were saying that the ChatGPT was actually telling the user to complete your own tasks, kind of like, hey, I've gone this far, you finish it, which I just found hilarious.
Oh, AI as an adolescent. That's what it sounds like for any of you who have teenagers.
Yeah. That's funny. Right. I put one dish away, you finish it.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So you mentioned, Chris, like, let's shift into, we wanted to have a little conversation about some research that also came out this past week around generative AI and marketing specifically, which we've talked about before, but there's some cool stats here to share. So Chris, I know you dug deeply into this study that you found. Tell us a bit about what executives are saying.
Yeah, so Capgemini released a study this past week, and it was a survey of 1,800 executives overseeing marketing strategies at companies across the world with annual revenues of $1 billion or more. So we're talking big players, right? And here are some of the numbers that were really mind-blowing to me. 60% say that they're integrating generative AI into marketing efforts, right? Admittedly, don't know how that's defined, but, you know, again, just the trend line that this is something that folks are playing with. I know I'm playing with it. You're playing with it. Others are as well. And it feels like there's more formality in some of these larger organizations. 37% are actively implementing across different initiatives. An additional 21% say they're in the experimental phase. Half of organizations have set aside budget for it. Half of organizations say they've got allocated teams. But I think, you know, and this is something, Stephanie, you've been a huge proponent of. At the same time, this study found that 70% of organizations may be exposed to ethical challenges over their use. So there's all this tremendous opportunity. It's like the genie is out of the bottle. And yet, perhaps we're not thinking about what risk there is to putting the genie in the marketing world for our organization. So what do you think about some of this, Stephanie?
Well, there's many ethical considerations that have to be thought about. And that's one thing that we Revive have noticed a little bit as we've started, you know, talking and helping clients work through the assessment of how to use generative AI and their marketing teams. There are so many great applications, but also a lot of times folks get really excited and start jumping in without thinking about what are the guidelines and rules to have in place. So one example would be copyright issues, right? So you cannot copyright an output from generative AI. That has been ruled, that has been decided. So what does that mean in terms of using assets in a marketing space? Well, typically you like to make sure that it's proprietary in some way, and you can't do that. The other, and I will say there's not as much issue going in. I think at first we all thought that you might have plagiarism, you know, if you copy pasted from generative AI. That's not as much of an issue because that's not how these LLMs work. They're more predictive than they are copy paste, but still they're good discussions to have with teams. So that's just one example. There are other examples. This one is far more complex, I think, and that's around disclosure. How do you disclose to your audience, the public, if you're using generative AI, which is not super simple. It's pretty simple if you're using like a Midjourney or a DALL-E to create your imagery. That's pretty easy to say, created in collaboration with generative AI. And maybe you make it part of your concept, right? I think we've seen some really interesting examples where it's part of the concept and it, you know, actually is more than just being efficient. But how do you do it when you're just using it as part of research or as part of your exploration? And that's something that as an agency, you know, we think a lot about because we certainly want to disclose to our clients if we're using these tools, and we are, and wanting to make sure that we do disclose them. So anyway, disclosure is a whole separate thing. There are about 10 others, right? But these are the conversations that we don't see yet organizations having these really documented as guidelines. We Revive do have some guidelines and we're sharing them with our clients, but we don't see that happening on the brand side as much.
Well, and I also think we can't lose sight of this, even when you hear, you know, for instance, my enthusiasm, right? I think even in my playing around, there could be a little bit of a race to the average in certain applications, right? So in other words, if you're looking for it to generate certain types of things, it may not be as insightful or breakthrough as you think. It gets you to answers quicker that as humans, we can interrogate, right? It gets us to places to dig more. But in my mind, again, it's still about allowing us to function in the marketing realm as humans, to do the things that we do best, right? So I don't see this as, certainly there may be places where tasks can be more automated than others, but I still think we have to be really mindful that these aren't the answers that we get. These are clues that help us think as humans and become better marketers. And I think if we just use these as answers, it's just like, you're going to get a race to the average. How about that?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I like some of the stats from the study, which is all about how generative AI will augment creativity, which is what marketers are starting to see. So 57% believe it will create new possibilities. 55% see it motivating teams to go beyond conventional boundaries. I love this, so, you know, because we at Revive talk about seeing beyond and going beyond and really pushing into the bold. And it feels like it's a great example of, you know, just having a second pair of eyes, if you will, that help you think about what are the gaps in your analysis? What are the gaps in your ideas? What are the challenges with it? What are some other examples of ideas? What's a nugget? And it's not a finished product. I think that's a big thing to be clear on, is I think sometimes there might be some marketers out there who are like, oof, I don't have enough time to create content or create things, so I'm just going to use ChatGPT. And It does create some efficiencies, but it's not going to be a final product. You still need that creative. You still need that writer. You still need that strategist. This actually is an augmentation of creativity, and there are some efficiencies to be gained, but it doesn't replace your teams. It doesn't replace your agencies. It doesn't replace, you know, your doers, your makers.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But it's time to get, you know, it's time to get busy, right? So, I mean, again, I will credit you, Stephanie, with inspiring me, as well as some of the work that we see our clients doing, to dig into this more. It is so easy to get sucked into the vortex of what's in front of us today. And we see some of these big organizations have, you know, are doubling down and understanding what it can do. You know, I think it's, you know, if I have any kind of advice, it's get educated. Right? Don't turn a blind eye. Get educated, because I think it'll be quick to see the potential here. And then it's, you know, think about that ethical implementation. How do you start experimenting? How do you then kind of build roadmaps, which start saying, where do we think we have the most potential, and how, you know, how do you test, iterate, and build, which is this, these are all the steps that we do in marketing, right? So it's kind of just applying that mindset to a more kind of innovative view of how we do our work. But I also think, you know, the given how stressed just in general marketing budgets are in healthcare, how stressed marketing budgets are, it'd be foolish not to look at ways to kind of use this, not only just to be better and think better, but to be more efficient.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anyone out there, you know, we always love, shoot us a note. If you've used this for use cases of your own, if there's stories you have, would love to chat about it. If you have questions, we've got some folks, you know, internally who are really looking at these kinds of things. So we love to workshop it, because, hey, we're all at the beginning stage of this brand new thing, right? We're all learning. Nobody is 100% expert. Nobody 100% knows what the future will be. We're all doing it together. So it's a pretty exciting time. Okay, maybe we just hit our last headline pretty quickly, and then we'll wrap, because I think we're trying to keep this short, but there's a lot of news. So the last headline, I'll just hit it quick and then Chris, feel free to add on any takes. But CVS has come out with news in the last week. So on December 5, they, according to the Wall Street Journal, came out with an announcement that they're moving towards some price transparency, trying to simplify how prescription drug prices are set. So the current model is pretty complicated and there's a lot of negotiation involved. There's all these players. Certainly the retailer, certainly the pharmacy benefit managers, the payers, and also, of course, the manufacturers. And there's negotiation in there, there's middlemen in there, and there's a lot of factors that set these prices. And so CVS came out with their cost vantage model, one word, cost vantage, to simplify formulas. So now the formula is the cost of the drug, a predetermined markup, and a fee or reimbursement for the PBM, for the pharmacy benefit managers. Still not super clear, right? It's still not super simple. And there was some pushback that also came out right after that announcement that was like, yeah, well, the consumer may not quite feel this because you're still dependent upon your plan and you're out of pocket versus, you know, what the plan's able to pay. But hey, it's a step in the right direction. So I think this is really interesting. It's going to be something interesting to watch. And even more interesting, this is all probably inspired by Mark Cuban's model, his cost plus drug company, which made a huge splash about how prescriptions need to be lower cost and simplified. And we are coming to an election year too. So I bet this will be in the news even more. So there's a lot more around this, but any takes, Chris, on how we might think about this?
You know, one to watch. And, you know, it's one of those things that we'll see it come out or we won't see it come out. So I don't know what more to say about it. Step in the right direction, but it's going to take a bit to see.
And all part of this overall price transparency movement, which of course providers are dealing with too, and providers certainly recognize more than anyone else, it ain't simple. So we'll keep monitoring this one. Okay, let's wrap it up here. I think our short episode is not so short today, but that's okay. Thank you, Chris, for joining. Thank you, Chris, for keeping your eye on the pulse.
Oh, love the conversation. Thanks, Stephanie.
And for everyone listening, thank you for joining as well. And send us a note if you've seen interesting headlines, if you have thoughts on what we shared today. A lot of this stuff is new news. So, you know, we share our takes, but it's not the only take. So tell us if you have a different one. And share the show, if you can, with friends and colleagues with a rating and review. And until next time, don't be satisfied with the normal. Keep pushing that no normal. And we'll see you next time. 3, 2, 1.